Do you all remember the fog that took over Jefferson City a few weeks ago? Not that normal fog of a river city that's used to in the mornings, but this fog was this ominous darkness that moved in, and it was here in the afternoon and the evening, and it lasted for like 2 or 3 days. I remember being here at the office, working in my office there, and just after lunch, noticing how dark it had become outside, and I looked out the window and up at the sky, almost expecting to see this large alien spaceship with Cousin Eddie flying up into the middle of it to save planet Earth in the movie Independence Day. You know, on the way home that evening, early evening, I was disoriented. The landmarks and the things that I were used to here in Jefferson City were hard for me to tell. The fog was so thick, I could hardly see the lights of the car right in front of me. That fog changed how I viewed the city. Things that were familiar to me had changed significantly in the fog. Have you ever had an experience that changed the way you saw something or someone? I mean, maybe it's like a fog where you can't quite make out your bearings. Or maybe it's like when you decide to buy a new red Jeep, and now everywhere you look, there's red Jeeps. You never noticed it before, and people didn't just all of a sudden go buy red Jeeps because you decided to buy one. None of you are that powerful as influencers. You are just now awake to something that you were asleep to before. You're aware of something that always existed, but you weren't quite aware of it. Or maybe you read a book that changed the way you thought about a topic or a person or a moment in history. Or maybe you learned something new about someone's story that changed the way you understood them. Or maybe someone that you love died and you think about death and heaven very differently now. Or maybe you and someone that you love or know has battled or is battling with health issues or addiction, and because of that experience now, you've learned life is messy, and there are things that are just not in our control sometimes. Something or someone that was once one-dimensional to you has become multi-layered, multi-dimensional, and it has changed you, or it should. Well, today is Transfiguration Sunday in the church, the time that we look at the gospel's most spectacular and surprising story. It's the day that we hear the gospel telling of the time that Jesus and three of his closest disciples, Peter, James, and John, head up to the mountaintop. And when they're there, they experience a moment with God. In ancient literature, mountaintops are the places where heaven and earth meet. And so on that mountaintop, Jesus is transfigured or changed or transformed. His garments turn this dazzling white color beyond anything our earthly bleach can produce. And Jesus becomes radiant, glistening, his glory shining brightly. And two of Israel's great figures from the past are there, Moses and Elijah. They're cameos in this conversation with Jesus up on the mountain. And only Luke's gospel gives us a hint about what they talked about, which is Jesus' upcoming death and resurrection and what that means for all of us. Understandably, Peter, James, and John are a little bit terrified by all of it. They don't know what to do. They don't know what to say. But that doesn't keep Peter from speaking, as usual. And so, as a faithful Jew who knows his Bible, his scriptures, he knows that when God makes an appearance, you build a tent. And so Peter says, let's build three tents, one for Moses, one for Elijah, and one for Jesus right here. And then this cloud, this mist, this fog appears. Imagine that fog from a few weeks ago, confusing and disorienting, and they hear a divine voice that says, this is my son, the beloved. Listen to him. I mean, all their senses are overwhelmed. They see Jesus in a new light, literally. They see these two great all-stars from the past, Moses and Elijah, there, representing all the law and the prophets. They are overwhelmed by this mist, this fog, this cloud, and they hear a divine voice saying, listen to him. And then poof, the cloud and Moses and Elijah, they're gone. So now what? Well, verse 9 says that as they were coming down the mountain, Jesus ordered them to tell no one about what they had seen until after the Son of Man had risen from the dead. And so they kept the matter to themselves, questioning what this rising from the dead could mean. Now, reading multiple theologians and Bible scholars about this story, it brought me a lot of comfort to hear many of them say, "I really have no idea what this story means." It brings me a lot of comfort, and I appreciate the fact that they, unlike Peter, don't rush to just fill the moment with something they think they're supposed to say. I mean, because often we feel like we should know, but often we don't know. I mean, that could apply to a lot of the Bible. But we try and glean some lessons and some applications that fit our context today. And we take wonder and awe and we try and cram it into a 3-point sermon. And if they all start with the same letter or make a cool acronym, all the better. But maybe like Peter, James, and John, we are simply to stand in wonder and awe at the glory of Jesus. Perhaps that moment on the mountain was more about strengthening Jesus for what was to come than a moment for Peter, James, and John. Just like the time in the Garden of Gethsemane when Jesus and these same three go, and it's a time to strengthen Jesus for what is ahead, and those three friends can't manage to stay awake for the night. Maybe it's not about us and what we get out of it. Or maybe, perhaps, even the cloud wasn't planned. Maybe that was God's response to Peter trying to control the situation. And this cloud comes in to disorient them and to say, "Stop your tent-making plans. This is what I want you to know. This is my beloved. Listen to him." Maybe what we're supposed to do is just like them when we come down from the mountain. Listen to Jesus. Theologian Reverend Dr. Martha Simmons has a great way of describing the kind of praxis-oriented tension that all eschatology or study of the end times makes possible. So here's what she says. It is where the sweet by and by meets the nasty here and now. And by that, I think she means that the mountaintop is real, the kingdom of God is real, but we don't live there in fullness yet. There is this thin veil between the places where heaven is breaking through, but not in fullness yet. And we live in the valley. We live in the nasty here and now, where it's messy. And so, God meets us, yes, on the mountaintops, but God also meets us right here in the valley. When Jesus and the three come down from that mountaintop, they run right into the nasty here and now. See, the very next day, they encounter the terrible low of a father who is desperate for healing for his tormented son. The man shouts out to Jesus from the crowd, saying, "Teacher, I brought my son. He has a spirit that makes him unable to speak, and whenever it seizes him, it dashes him down. And he foams and grinds his teeth and becomes rigid. And I asked your disciples to cast it out, but they could not." Friends, we are way more familiar with this place than the mountaintops, right? This is the nasty here and now. Our children are hurting. Parents are angry and heartbroken and exhausted and desperate for answers. Mental illness for all ages is overwhelming, a national epidemic with far too much shame and far too few resources. This exhausted dad has no idea what happened up on the mountaintop, and I don't think he necessarily cared either. He needed Jesus in his valley. And Jesus met him there, and he healed his son. The sweet by and by meets the nasty here and now. Perhaps this is how Jesus fulfills the words of the prophet Isaiah, that every valley shall be lifted up and every mountain and hill be made low, and then the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all people will see it together. Just like at his birth, Jesus descended once again into the world, shining his light in all the dark places around and within, bringing healing and hope, and inviting his disciples and us, the beloved of God, to do the same as the ones who have been forever changed by our encounter with the divine. In his book, Whistling in the Dark, theologian Frederick Buechner reflects on the Transfiguration this way. In the Transfiguration, it was the holiness of Jesus shining through his humanness, his face so afire with it that they were almost blinded. Even with us, something like that happens once in a while. The face of a man walking his child in the park, of a woman picking peas in the garden, of sometimes even the unlikeliest person listening to a concert, say, or standing barefoot in the sand watching the waves roll in, or just having a cold drink at a Saturday baseball game in July. Every once and so often, something so touching, so incandescent, so alive transfigures the human face that it is almost beyond bearing. Now, perhaps Buechner takes too much liberty with the Transfiguration, making it ordinary and mundane. However, maybe it is precisely what we need to hear to have us help wake us up to the world and to see it in a new way, to see the divine in creation and the created, to see Jesus dwelling with us here in the valleys, to listen to Jesus teaching us how we might carry this transfigured light out into our world, refracting it with all that we meet. See, maybe it isn't as difficult as we think for the sweet by and by to meet us right here in the nasty here and now. As Scott Hosey remarked, even on all kinds of days when the disciples and Jesus were by no means having a mountaintop experience, and when dazzling garments of white were nowhere to be seen, even then, when Jesus smiled kindly at leopards, when he looked pained to see a sinner being shunned by the temple establishment, or when Jesus looked winsome after telling a hurting prostitute to go in peace because her sins were forgiven, there was a sense in which the disciples were seeing the face of the divine transfigured in also those ordinary moments. They were seeing hints of glory. They were seeing God vividly and surprisingly and, yes, dazzlingly on display in God's one and only Son, full of grace and truth. I love to go for walks. Sometimes downtown during the day, or in my neighborhood, or on trails in the city. And oftentimes I listen to podcasts, and sometimes I listen to music, and sometimes I still myself just enough to look around and pay attention, to see what is around me that I often miss in the fog of all the busyness. And I'm moved by the face of the divine in ordinary people and moments, the moments where I can see the hand of God or the very best of humanity, the moments when I recognize the divine in every face and creature and beauty of the world. Last week, on a walk in my neighborhood, I saw a dad playing basketball with his two young boys in the driveway. And I'm sure he was tired after a long day of work, and tired of chasing that basketball that never made it in the hoop. But he loves his sons. And so he makes time for them, because for them, but also for him. And on that same walk, I saw an older man walking his dog, stopping to smell and sniff every single thing to the dog's delight. And he did it because he loves his dog. And here at First Baptist recently, I've witnessed members prepare and serve meals for grieving families and friends, where love and food miraculously multiplied around the tables. I sat in on a Mission JC planning meeting this week where people left me in awe, gathered at the table with their unique gifts and passions, willing to add one more thing to already full plates because they believe in the mission of that day and bringing kindness to our community. And this week on Wednesday, I saw community friends and guests of Room at the End, our shelter for those experiencing homelessness, wash dishes and pick up trays because they wanted to serve. And I was left in awe and wonder. Those kind of divine moments are where we see the hints of glory, the light breaking through, and the nasty here and now. And I'm going to confess, I don't see those moments often. But it's not because there aren't a lot of red Jeeps out there. It's because I'm not awake often to what already exists. I'm not looking for the divine. And I'm not listening to Jesus as I should. Because it is in listening and looking that we are transfigured too. Remember, dear friends, that 9 disciples didn't go up to the mountaintop. They remained down in the valley with all the hurt and the hard. And maybe they heard about it once Jesus died. But in the meantime, they were there among the people still believing and that trusting that Jesus was who he said he was. Because they saw in his face the divine transfigured in all those ordinary moments with Jesus. They saw God vividly on display, yes, dazzlingly on display, in God's one and only, full of grace and truth. And so if today feels more like a valley than a mountaintop, take heart. Jesus is with us in the valleys, and there are hints of glory all around us. May we have eyes to see and ears to hear. And may we be transfigured, forever changed, by the encounter with the divines.